It's great to be here. It feels like the congregation already offered the sermon today. Really, you know, yeah, I was really moved by the depth of the sharing. So I'd like to start by telling a story. In the 17th century in Japan was a Zen teacher named Hakuin. And Hakuin was known for his poetry and his calligraphy, and he had a lot of visitors. One day, into the temple doors burst a samurai. So I imagine this samurai had his two swords hanging off his belt and his armor on and his big headgear. And he walked up to Hakuin and he said, "Tell me about heaven and hell." And Hakuin looked at him and said, "I wouldn't waste my time teaching somebody like you about heaven and hell. What makes you worthy of me even giving you a word?" And the samurai, no one speaks to a samurai like that. So what did he do? He pulled out his sword and he put it up over his head and he moved toward Hakuin. And Hakuin said, "That is hell." And the samurai took a step back and he put his sword back into its sheath. And Hakuin said, "That is heaven." So we're like that samurai. We don't know what our hells are. And as long as we don't know what our hells are, we will continue to inflict those hells on ourselves and other people. And if we don't want to do that, if we want to make a change, we have to first see clearly what our hells are. If we don't see them, we can't change them. And so that's what I'd like to talk about today. I'd like to talk about what our hells are, the ways that we suffer, so that we don't inflict them on ourselves and other people. And this sounds like a little bit of a dark topic to bring up, but it's so important, because if we can see them, we can transform them. But if we can't see them, there's no hope. There's no hope. Now, originally, I thought I'd talk about the six different sorts of hell realms in Buddhism, but I realized that's way too much to do in a short talk with you guys. So I want to only talk about two of them. And the two are this: the suffering we get from not getting what we want, and the suffering we experience from getting what we want. All right, so those are the two. And I'm going to give a couple examples of each one of those. Yeah. So let's start with the kind of suffering we have when we don't get what we want. And this, the first example of this is what I like to call our reactionary suffering. Reactionary suffering happens when we react without thinking. And it's usually react against something we find a threat. Now, you may have realized that human beings are animals, and that most every animal in this animal realm reacts by instincts. Something happens, and we just react to it. And so an animal, when faced with a lack of food or shelter or reproductive needs or danger, they'll just react. And they're not going to think about it. And we do this as well. We might like to think we're better, but we're not. You know, oftentimes we go through our life a lot like the dog who bites the person who's trying to feed it. You know, the dog doesn't know, doesn't use its wisdom to know that this is a person who's helping me, and that by just reacting and biting, I'm actually making things worse for myself. And we are like this. We do this all the time. And many of us get really trapped in this reactionary suffering, this just reacting for a stimulus, react, react. You know, I think about children who have been raised in abusive homes, and one of the things we've learned about children whose parents don't respond to them with logical consistency is that those children don't know how to use their own wisdom to understand cause and effect. So they get trapped in this reactionary suffering. They just react. even when they're adults. So some of us might have experienced some of that. But even beyond individuals, cultures can get trapped in reactionary suffering. And we are so trapped there right now. Look at our politics. Each side of the political spectrum just reacts against the other side. It's their fault. They started it. And our politicians seem to lack the wisdom necessary to govern. So you might recognize this in yourself. Maybe there are times when you do this just reacting, and that see how much suffering that does. You maybe keep your eye open for that. Okay, so that's the first one. The second kind of suffering we have when we don't have enough is the suffering of our desire. Desire. So there's in Buddhist mythology, there are these beings called the hungry ghosts. Now, the hungry ghosts have great big bellies that are distended from hunger, like a starving child sometimes grows a large belly. And they're surrounded by everything they need, but they've got tiny, tiny little mouths and pencil-thin necks. So no matter how much they try and stuff into their mouths, they can't satisfy their suffering. They never feel like they have enough. So a lot of us are like these hungry ghosts, where we let our desires cause us to suffer. Maybe you're like me. You know, I noticed when we have these family gatherings at the holidays, I eat way too much, right? I look at all this great food that people have brought to potlucks and think, oh, I want that. Ooh, I want that. Ooh, I want that. And I'm just like those hungry ghosts. I'm surrounded by things that are really lovely, but they make me suffer. And if we think about some of the people that have this kind of suffering from desire, we think about addictions. Addictions of all sorts are this kind of suffering. So whether it's substances like alcohol or drugs, we want more, but the more we have, the more we suffer. Or maybe our addiction is to something like shopping. It's so easy for us now to buy whatever we want online, even if we don't really want it. I had to giggle when I discovered there's a whole group of videos on YouTube where people buy things and they unbox them on camera. And, you know, it's not like they need the thing at all. It's actually the getting of the thing that is so exciting. The box arrives, you get to open it up, you get to pull everything out. After that, it's kind of done. You know, it just goes in the closet and you want to get another thing to unbox. It's a kind of suffering of our desire. Or how about this one? We can be also addicted to ideas, like anger, for instance. Do you know a person in your life who's addicted to anger? Again, we see this in our politicians, in our leaders. And we see it in ourselves where we return again and again to that news source that tells it like we think is true, so we can get angry at those other people who just don't get it. We get addicted to this desire of our ideas. So maybe you could take a moment and wonder, what are my chronic desires? What are the things that come up in me again and again that I want? And when I see them, do they actually satisfy my desire? Or am I like the hungry ghosts, where they really makes me suffer more? So that's a couple of ideas around things that ways we cause ourselves suffering when we don't have enough. That's a little easier to see, but the ones that's really interesting to me are the ways that we cause ourselves to suffer right in the midst of our abundance, right in the midst of having enough. So I want to talk about two of those. And the first one of these I like to call middle-class suffering. Middle-class suffering. And most of us are probably middle-class people. And as a society, our Western societies are just mired in this middle class suffering. We have enough, but we want more. Right? We're so obsessed with being comfortable in our culture. And we're just fine until we see somebody who's a little bit more comfortable than we are. And then we want that. That's our middle class suffering. We're constantly jealous of what other people have. And so we want to go and take that for ourselves. Steve Jobs famously said, "People don't know what they want until you show it to them." And so he would create things that he could show to people. And I completely have this middle class suffering. I remember feeling really happy when I got my first iPhone. I thought, this is the greatest thing ever. And it was so wonderful. Did all these things. And then another one came out, a new model. And now suddenly I'm jealous of the people who have the new model. So I want that one. And how many times have I done that now? I'm afraid to tell you. Yeah. There's a story we laugh about in my family. One day, my brother-in-law went into Costco, and he saw this line of people in Costco, and he said, "Oh, I'm going to get in that line. I don't know what they want, what they're going to get at the end, but no matter what it is, I want two of them." So it's that middle class suffering. We have enough, but we just want a little bit more, even if we don't know what it is. Sounds so silly, doesn't it? Sounds so silly. Okay, the last one. This is also a kind of suffering about our abundance. So it's actually the suffering of abundance, of having everything we want. So look around at your life for a minute. Think about how abundant it is. Most every one of us have a beautiful shelter to live in. We have plenty of food. We have friends. We have safety. Our minds work. We have time. We have the ability to appreciate art and music. We can sit down at our TV and get unlimited movies from Netflix. We can go to Hawaii if we want to. We just have everything that we could possibly imagine wanting. Imagine someone who lived 1,000 years ago looking at all that we have. They would think we're some kind of gods or something. But are we happy? By and large, no. By and large, not. Why is that? We have everything we need. Why aren't we just ecstatically happy? Well, I'd like to offer just several ideas about maybe why that is. The first idea is we have everything we want, but without contrast, it doesn't seem like we have everything we want. You know, you hear that people describe heaven as a place where the streets are paved with gold. Well, if you're used to walking around ankle deep in mud, gold streets sound really great. But if all you ever see are gold streets, imagine the glare, right? Imagine how bright the sun would be shining off the gold streets. You want the gold streets to go away. Somehow we need contrast to even know that we have enough. And when we have so much, we don't have enough contrast to even know we have a lot. This came up for me again. My wife and I, a couple of years ago, during the pandemic, we got to go spend a month in Hawaii. My wife is from Hawaii, so we go there fairly often. And we got there, and the beach was great when we first got there. And by about week two or three, the beach started to get a little bit boring until about 3 days before it was time to go home. And then all of a sudden, we couldn't get enough time at the beach. It was the contrast that made the beach so lovely to us. You know, it wasn't a northwest rain, which we knew we came from and were about to return to, but once we were a whole month of possibility of going to the beach, the beach, whatever, didn't seem that great. So we need contrast. So that's the first reason why I think we suffer from abundance. A second one is that a perfect life is a meaningless life. And what do I mean by that? I think we need challenges to rise to in order to really feel meaning in our lives. It's not the accomplishments themselves. It's the work that brings the accomplishment that gives us a sense of meaning. If it's just handed to us, it doesn't mean much at all. You know, just think of the really wealthy parents that have children who suffer so, and they had everything they needed. It was given to them. They didn't have to struggle for anything. It's one of the reasons why Zen practice is so challenging. It's intentionally challenging. Every year at New Year's, we do something called 108 prostrations, where we bow deeply, we touch all the way down, put our body all the way on the ground over the course of an hour and a half, and we get back up and we do it again. And it's physically hard. When's the last time you did 108 push-ups? But that's why it's meaningful. That's why it's meaningful, because it's a challenge. And we look forward to it every year. So one more reason why we suffer when we have everything we want, it's because of impermanence. Nothing lasts. Everything changes. So while everything might seem perfect, we know at a deep level that that perfection is temporary. It's not going to last. And so anxiety comes up. Things are great now, but just wait. Ooh, it's going to go away. And even if all that out there doesn't seem to change, we change. We change. What we think is perfect at one stage of our life no longer seems perfect anymore. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a rich rock star. That seemed really important. I'm so glad that didn't happen. I'd have probably a miserable life right now if that had happened. But at the time, that really seemed important to me. So I changed. I changed. All right, so that's a lot of information about what kind of suffering we might encounter. And there's more that we could say, but I want to give us some ideas about how we meet that. Because once we see that and give it a label and say, oh, okay, that's where I am right now, then what do we do about that? So actually what we do about that is very simple. And it's very easy, at least to speak about. And it comes down to this. We notice. We notice. Just like the samurai who didn't notice that he lived in a hell until Hakuin pointed it out to him. And just in noticing, he was able to take his sword and put it back in its sheath. We can do the same thing. As soon as we notice, for instance, that we're trapped by our desire, we can smile to ourselves and say, ah, there it is, the suffering of desire. And that's all we need to do. Just noticing by itself is enough to bring about a slow transformation. Now, it might be that we have to notice our desire over and over and over and over again, but every time we do, it grows a little weaker and a little weaker and a little weaker, and we grow happier and happier and happier. So simply being aware is the key. Now, that sounds easy for me to say, and I trust you to practice this as best you can with the most kindness and lack of judgment that you can muster. It really doesn't do any good for me to, for instance, see my desire and say, oh, I am such a jerk. I just do that again and again. That's not going to help. But for me to meet myself with kindness and say, ah, there's my desire. Mm-hmm. Oh, I really suffer from that, and I don't want to make myself suffer anymore. Okay. And when I do that again and again, things change. Okay, so we're out of time. But if you find yourself being like that samurai, and I hope that you can find your suffering before you chop somebody's head off with your sword and put that sword back in your sheath and say, ah, my dear, I see the suffering and I don't want you to suffer anymore. That's my hope for all of us.